You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. Today, Andrew Schlecht is back on the show. Nothing makes me happier than seeing Andrew Schlecht back on the Game Theory Podcast, an unbelievable guest for an unbelievable time in the world. Andrew, you are there live in person at the in-season tournament in Las Vegas. We're going to talk about that at the top of the show. And then we're going to dive into first quarter NBA awards, which is the real reason that I had you on the show to talk about those. Andrew, what's going on, buddy?
A little bit of everything right now, Sam. We're watching lots of hoops. Get to watch Cooper Flagg tonight. I get to join the Koopa Troopas, as we discussed before we started recording. Cannot wait for that. Man, it's a crazy busy time of year. Getting ready for Christmas with kids, you know, a little bit of everything, you know.
Yeah, man, it's great. So, like, I've kind of let people know on the vacation or on the podcast side, like, I'm going on vacation next week to Bali. I've never done, like, we're not doing Christmas Day away, like, we're coming back like 2 days before Christmas, but I've never done like the Christmas, you know, getaway thing. So, this is the closest I'll probably get. So, I'm excited about that. Nice. You know, it's gonna be great. I gotta be honest though, I was a little bummed out yesterday. Steelers lost, and then you know, yesterday I go and, you know, my wife, she's not asked for much, but she really just wanted like a Coca-Cola yesterday in the beautiful country of Australia. Decided to have all sorts of random flat Coca-Cola things. So like, we went to a McDonald's. And the, do you know, sometimes the fountain machine's all fucked up, right?
Yeah.
And like, just comes out watery.
Yep.
So the second time we went to the grocery store and I was like, okay, I'm going to get like the glass bottles. Those feel like the safest ones to have some sort of like good Coke experience. Flat as shit, right?
Really?
It's crazy. So then I go back to the grocery store.
Southern hemisphere. Wow.
Killing me, right? I go back to the grocery store. I pull like a can of, you know, the boxes of like 10 cans, 12 cans, whatever those are. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I pull one of those off the shelf, and before I pull it, like, or right after I pull it to where it's like tipping off the shelf a little bit. Right. I realize that it's been open. Right. So three of those fuckers come out and slide down and drop on the floor and go, bam, explode all over me and all over the floor of the grocery store. I was one of those guys yesterday that literally exploded cans of Coke all over the floor of a grocery store.
Wow.
And so shout out to the folks that had to clean that up here in Australia. I was very sorry.
Shout out to Coca-Cola. Man, what is going on there? Yeah. That's a
bizarre experience. And by the way, the cans in the box were still a little bit flagged. We got to up the Coke game here, here in Australia. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's happening.
That would never happen in the U.S. Never, ever would that happen in the U.S. I'll tell you that.
Can you imagine? Can you possibly imagine? There would be riots in the streets.
No. Yeah, there would. There would.
Unbelievable. Okay, so you're at the in-season tournament. Yesterday, you got to see two games in person. The first one, the Indiana Pacers defeat the Milwaukee Bucks to move to the in-season tournament finals in a fun, close game, much like the first game that the Indiana Pacers won against the Boston Celtics over in Indiana. Was that in Boston? I can't remember. Who knows? Who can possibly look these things up?
Yeah,
I thought it was in Indy. The second was a blowout. The Lakers blew the doors off the Pelicans in every way, shape, and form. I'll give you the floor here. What was the biggest takeaway for you yesterday at the in-season tournament?
I mean, it's really about the Tyrese Halliburton coming out party that's been happening over the past couple weeks to the rest of the NBA world. We've been watching Tyrese for a while and know how good he is. But now the entire NBA fan base gets to see him play and know how awesome he is and know that he's an engine unto himself for the Indiana Pacers. And he was incredible yesterday. Closed the game for Indy, knocked out the Bucks, and the Bucks very much wanted to win that game. So another takeaway for me is that the Bucks were upset, and there were reports coming from Chris Haynes, which we really just know means coming from Damian Lillard, that there was an argument in the locker room with Bobby Portis yelling at Adrian Griffin. And does that totally alarm me? Not really. There's been a lot of weird stuff going on with the Bucks, certainly. The Terry Stotts thing is weird.
That's the big thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
There is that piece of it that if this was a one-off, it'd be fine, but you have the Terry Stotts thing.
Yeah,
you have them true. Him not realizing to play drop coverage, and then the players going to him and being hey, you need to play drop coverage. We're getting our ass kicked on defense. What are we doing here? This is now the third thing here where this is a real question. And by the way, I think the Bucks are 15-7 now, so they're a great basketball team.
Yeah.
They're a great basketball team that might not be getting the best coaching, though.
Yeah, it is strange. And I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and give them more time to get it together. They did add a massive piece, and they did take away a massive piece, adding Dame, taking away Drew. And I think that they deserve time, and they are also winning during that time, too. So that's the good part about it. But I just wonder how tenable of a situation it is for Giannis and Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez, who have been guys that have just done it in-house for so long. We're not talking to anybody, we're dealing with this as a group with the coaching staff, with the front office. We're not airing things out with reporters as we walk out of the locker room, which is what was happening yesterday. And so I wonder how that specific piece will be handled amongst that group. But, I also think it's a good thing that they really wanted to win, and that they weren't just whatever, we're cool, we'll go home. They were pretty dejected after that game and believe they should have won. And if not for some miscommunication, what they called organizational, not organizational as the team, but organized, they're just not organized enough on offense. And that's been the biggest problem with them is stated from the players, that they just don't have it together.
Yeah. And it felt like what I was reading into the, quotes that Chris Haynes, stated or whatever, mm-hmm. is that they wanted more coaching in terms of sets being run. It felt too late in games, hey, when defenses are doing this to us, we need to counter and do something else. And it didn't feel necessarily we knew what that was the players, I don't know, maybe the players had ideas. It just wasn't necessarily shared in the article. It is interesting, though, that we're at that point where the Bucks, it does keep coming up. We're now at number three here in terms of the coaching flags that keep
it's true.
Flashing and blaring. I want to talk about Tyrese Halliburton because we don't want to spend a crazy amount of time on the in-season tournament, right? So Tyrese Halliburton in the two tournament games so far, he has scored 53 points, dished out 27 assists, grabbed 17 rebounds, has zero turnovers in these two games.
What in the world? Like, that's the craziest stat to me.
He's shooting, I think, 56, 40, 100. We're going to talk about awards here momentarily. Tyrese Halliburton has been a top five player in the league this year, and I just need everybody to know that. Like, I've mentioned that on the show previously. I've mentioned it on Twitter. Like, I've talked about it. This is a dude right now. And he is the kind of dude where the Pacers now organizationally need to be shifting into like a competitive space, in my opinion. Not to say that they aren't competitive now. I think their roster is quite fun, and I think they've done a really good job of hitting on like really smart marginal inefficiencies, right? Like, everybody thought Aaron Naismith was a throw-in to the Malcolm Brogdon deal that brought them a late first round pick. No, Aaron Naismith is turned into like the guy in that deal now. He's closing games for them. Remember when Buddy Hield requested a trade in the preseason?
That
was a thing that happened. Now he's closing games for a team that's in the in-season tournament finals and has been really, really good.
And starting now.
Who knows? And starting, and who knows where that goes. So, look, the Pacers supporting cast has been great. I don't want to shortchange Miles Turner. I don't want to shortchange any of these guys. You know, Obi Toppin has done a solid job playing as like a starting four man as well. They've done really well. Halliburton's the driver, though, here. Like, everything is Tyrese Halliburton within this offense. It is remarkable. What was it like watching that in person?
He was just picking the Bucks apart. I mean, if he wasn't picking them apart with his passing, he was getting to the hoop. I mean, he has these scoop layups that look really difficult, but the thing about Tyrese is, like, he makes difficult things look really easy, and he does them with such joy. They're just like, it's impossible not to have fun watching him play basketball.
Yeah.
His ability to drive and finish well at the hoop, I think, is one of his more underrated skills, because he's definitely, I mean, he's so good at that. And then clearly a great shooter and a guy that just gets everybody involved in ways that are so helpful for them. Like, he gets it to Buddy Hield right in the shooting pocket. He knows how to throw alley-oops to Obi Toppin in a way where Obi's just going to go up and go get it. Like, the fact that he is like specifically knows these guys, and you can tell like he's probably studied with them. Like, how do you like the ball thrown to you? You know, where, when, in what situations do you like the ball? You know, if I'm throwing it to you in the corner, where do you want to catch it? And like, those are the things that like really smart point guards do. And I promise you Tyrese Halliburton's doing that, because, and that's a part of like not turning it over too, is like, he's such a smart processor of the game that he can do all of that in real time. And they've created the best offense in the league because of him. And the starting lineup is so perfect for him. You have the floor spacing, you have extra playmaking with Bruce Brown, and they have everything they need. I think Carlisle deserves a ton of credit. One, to bench Ben Mathurin after, was it like 11 or 12 games, I think, where it was just like, this isn't working. You look at the lineup data through 12 games, like, this isn't working. So he switched it. And he deserves a lot of credit for that, because that's not easy, especially to a guy who was like a high lottery pick, who probably thinks he deserves a certain amount of shots and a certain amount of possessions. I think that's there's some of the value there with having a veteran coach. That's just like, I don't care. Like, you're going to the bench, I don't care where you're drafted or what's going on. I think, you know, all of those things really stuck out to me yesterday as I was like getting to be around the Pacers a little bit and then just watch them in person for the first time this year.
And I loved the fact that yesterday we got to see Adrian Wojnarowski on ESPN report, like, Tyrese is starting to make his case to other players. Come play with me. I'm going to get you paid. I'm going to make you better. You're going to play a fun style of basketball. Like, that's a great pitch. Like, truly, that's a great pitch. To be like, mm-hmm. going to play with Tyrese Halliburton, they have all the cap space in the world this summer. They have real trade assets that they're going to be able to move if they want to at the deadline to be able to go get somebody. Mm-hmm. Truly, it's a pretty fantastic pitch, man. Like, you know that he is going to put you in the best position, that once you sign this deal, he's going to set you up for the next contract.
Yep.
You know that you're going to win. Like, we're proving that right now, right? It's got to mm-hmm. be a defense conscious guy, I think. But they can go get to, like, they can go pay guys. This, you know, the name is obviously OG Anunoby. That's the name that has been connected there for a while. He's an expiring sure. contract, you know, after this year. I think it lines up really, really well. We'll see mm-hmm. if Toronto moves him. Obviously, we'll see if he ends up hitting the free agency market. You never know, right?
Yep.
Let's move to the other game now. There's been a lot of talk about Zion Williamson. I think that's like mm-hmm. the prevailing story, it feels like, after that game.
Yes.
So if you go to the Game Theory YouTube channel, please do that. Go subscribe. Game Theory Podcast with Sam Vecenie. Go hit that subscribe button. It's a great product. You'll be able do to it. See these tape breakdowns that I do. I did Zion a few weeks ago, and mm-hmm. I did a game where he went for, like, I forget what the totals were. I think it was like 22, 10 rebounds, 9 assists or something like that against the Nuggets, right? I picked like mm-hmm. a good game, right? Like, I wasn't, yeah. you know, going in just being like, hey, like, let's pick like his worst game of the year or anything. Like, last night was one of his worst games of the year, right? I picked like a pretty good game.
Yeah.
And even in that game, my biggest takeaway was this guy is not the same athletically. Like, right. that is the biggest thing. You watched Zion at Duke. It was, this person should not exist as a human being. This person yeah. does not, like, have the same genetics that I do, like, as a human, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
What did you think seeing him in person? Because I think that, like, Russillo, obviously, and, you know, people know that I love Russillo. I go on his show. I'm a big fan. Russillo, it felt like, got, like, shit on a little bit yesterday because he was like, look, like, Zion, you know, seeing him in person, like, it's just not the same. The tape is like what lines up to me as well.
Yeah, there's just like hardly any explosion at all. And when you yeah. take the explosion out of it, now he's just like a big guy who's not necessarily fast. And yep. so it's like, okay, well, what is he? Because he's not a great rebounder, which I think limits him a lot. Because, like, if he was, then it's just like, yeah, he's a 4 and he's probably okay. But the lack of rebounding, the lack of like a legit jumper, it leaves you thinking, okay, what is he as an offensive player? Defensively, there's a lot to be desired there, especially when you play him and Jonas together. It's like, boy, they are just slow. Like, they just get, yeah. they're really, really slow. And they have some good point of attack defenders, but they also have CJ McCollum out there. Like, they're just overall just like a pretty slow team. And that stuck out to me quite a bit. And they're playing against 39-year-old LeBron, and LeBron looked like freakish compared to them.
Dude.
Which he is, by the way. Yeah, he is freakish.
100% yeah, against LeBron, but yeah, unbelievable.
But yeah, I am concerned. Like, I'm concerned about the Zion situation. And I'm willing to be patient, but boy, it just does not look good so far. And it's concerning. He still is finishing well. 0 to 3 feet, 73%. Like, he's still finishing, but it's like, how often can we get there? You know, is the question. Like, can he get downhill over and over and over again? Which is yeah. what he was, I mean, last year. And I remember watching it, the game against the 76ers, where he got hurt, but it was like, he was putting together a masterpiece. I was like, oh my
gosh. It was unbelievable. He's so special when he's right.
He really is. And it's just kind of sad that he's not able to get there as much. I mean, this is a career low in shots from 0 to 3 feet for him, percentage wise.
Yeah,
by a lot compared to his like first and second year, and then it went down even last year, and it's down even further this year. So it's not even so much like what's he shooting there? Because he's shooting a career high from 0 to 3 feet. But it's a volume is such a big deal, you know, in the league, yep. whether it's like 3-point volume or if you are somebody that gets downhill, like how often are you getting to the rim? He's just not getting there quite as much. And so that's where the concern is for me is like, can he still get there enough to make it matter for the opposing teams?
I thought Shaq had some interesting comments yesterday. I'm just going to pull those up now.
Avery Robinson and your good friend Hakeem Olajuwon.
And you couldn't do it.
I couldn't do it.
Okay.
So, because you know why? Because I realized I wasn't working as hard as I thought I was.
Ah.
I want to make some points about Zion.
Okay.
It's not run hard. It's not a diss. It's going to be a lesson from one great big man to another guy that could be a great man. Does not run hard. I had the same problem my first, second year. I thought I was running hard. Because Charles talked about this all the time. My talent going to get me 20. And when I start going to 20, 30, and 40, it's because I start doing certain things. He doesn't create easy points for himself. I saw a couple of times we had a couple guys at the basket. He don't seal, right? He doesn't demand the ball. Like, you got a small guy, and we talk about all the time, barbecue chicken alert. Charles talk about all the time, you can't let a little guy guard you. And he doesn't have that look. Like, I'm not the greatest athlete ever, but I know a look when I see it. In every sport, I know a look. Tiger Woods had that look. Jack Nicholson had that look. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just doesn't have that look. And he
first and foremost, the thing that caught me there was the fact that he was like, Jack Nicholson had that look. What, did Jack watching from the Lakers courtside, he had that look as he was out here as a fan watching the Lakers? He had that look in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Yeah.
He had that look in The Departed. I mean,
he certainly did. He certainly did in that movie. Yep. He certainly did. As the Joker. I mean, come on.
But really, though, like, the substance of what Shaq is saying there, I think, matches the tape. Like, truly,
yeah.
People will get on Shaq for that. Like, people like to get on Shaq and these older guys for being hard on some of these players. Guys, it does truly match the tape. And it's frustrating. Zion needs to really just get serious about it again. Like, yeah. that it feels like that is where this is going, right? Mm-hmm. And the Pelicans have real decisions to make. Like, Brandon Ingram is a free agent after next season. They need to figure out, like, what are we doing? What are we building toward? What do we have here in Zion and Brandon? What do we have here with some of these young guys like Herb Jones, like Dyson Daniels, like Jordan Hawkins, right? Trey Murphy is a stud, and they're going to have to pay him 9 figures here coming up soon because he's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to figure that out. And that's a real factor, I think, moving forward. I want to talk about the Lakers, but maybe we'll transition into the awards talk now because I want to talk a lot about the Lakers, particularly their two best players during the awards section. So maybe we'll do that. Let's take a quick commercial break. Then we'll be back and we'll start doing awards. All right, Andrew, we're here. We're ready. We're going to dive in to first quarter NBA awards. I'm going to do this for the first quarter, halfway through the season, and three quarters of the way through the season. And then obviously we'll do an end of season awards thing as well. I think it'll be interesting to kind of watch the race evolve that way throughout the course of the year on this show. So we're going to do today MVP, All NBA, Defensive Player of the Year, All Defense, Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, and Most Improved Player. Those are the categories I sent you, right?
Yep.
I did top threes. Did you pick top threes for the awards, or did you just do one?
I have several that we can talk about. Great. Yeah, we can do top threes. Awesome. Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to start with MVP. MVP is 5 on the ballot, typically, right?
Yep.
I'm just going to say who number one is to start here and go down for MVP, because the rest of it, I think, will lead into all NBA, because I think it's important to note with all NBA now that positions are gone, right? Mm-hmm. So it's no longer, you know, two guards, two forwards, and a center. it's the five best guys. So theoretically, the five best, the five guys you have in the top five for MVP should be your first team all NBA team, right? Or at least that's the way that I did it. So the way that this shook out for me was I had two guys pretty clearly at the top. I had two guys pretty clearly at three and four. And then I had probably four, I would say, that were in the next group that were like battling for five. So are the top two for you Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid?
I actually have Nikola Jokic and Giannis.
Okay.
As my top two. Embiid is like very close.
Yep.
I think Giannis is having a pretty underrated season. Highest effective field goal percentage of his career this year. Like we said, like this, there's a lot of changes happening with the Bucks, and he's the reason why they're 15-7. You know, like he's the reason why that they've been steady. And I'm curious to see how the defense evolves through the year because it's been bad, and I don't necessarily even blame him for it. But he's still just so dominant with Middleton not being right every night and all the changes, the coach, everything. I mean, there's just a lot there that I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to give it to him because like with Embiid, he's like Tyrese Maxey's been unbelievable. And I think Nick Nurse has been so good for them. I think Nick Nurse has been exactly what they needed. And so like there's a lot more help and a lot less working against Joel. And I don't mean to punish him for that. Like they're like neck and neck for me, but I just kind of give the nod to Giannis just because he is overcoming quite a bit more, if that makes sense. And he's providing to me a little bit more value there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I ended up with Giannis at five. So I do have him as a first team all NBA player this year. The defense having dropped off very slightly, even from his high standard. And I think he's the one that's like holding up this defense in any way that it possibly can be held up.
Yeah.
I do have him at five for now, though, because I think the defense has been a little bit worse. If you look at some of the guards that I'm going to talk about at three and four, the fact that they are able to make plays as a passer and decision maker and real primary driver of offense in a substantial way for their teams ended up pushing those guys over the top for me. But I had Giannis at five, and I have Giannis as a first team all NBA guy. I think Giannis has been unbelievable this season in leading the Bucks to, you know, this 15-7 start in spite of many of the challenges that they have had. So I have Jokic at one. So you also have Jokic at one, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, there's no contest right now.
Yeah, it's really, really hard to talk about Nikola Jokic on some level to me because it's hard to not sound boring, I think. He's averaging 29 points, 13 rebounds, 10 assists right now. He's shooting 54% from the field, 78% from the line. Honestly, the efficiency numbers have dropped like very, very slightly. And because of that, I think there is a case that the guy I'm going to have like in that 3-4 range has been very, very slightly better than him offensively this season. I think that the fact that Jokic plays center as opposed to point guard gives such a different dynamic to the entire team in terms of the way that the Nuggets are able to operate and able to invert their offense and able to account for myriad things that defenses pose to them. I think Jokic is very clearly the best player in the league right now. I think that it's not all that close.
Yeah. And he makes it all look so easy, you know, because it kind of simply is easy for him. He's just similar to what we were talking about with Tyrese earlier. Like he just processes the game faster than everybody else. That's just like simply it. Like he just understands the game better than everybody else and plays it in a way. He is only thinking about winning. He's like only thinking about how he can win. This year he's having to score more than he did last year, and I think he kind of needs to.
That's right.
And I think he's learned that. You know, he's taken a lot more shots this year, which is like good. Finally. Part of me wishes he would care a little bit about getting that 0.2 assists added to his total so that he could average a triple double, because I think he could very easily do that. But he doesn't care. He didn't care about that, Sam. Like, he just doesn't, which is just a like that 0.2% is just like a testament to him. And that he, because I think most guys would look at that and be like, let's do this. Like, I can, over the next five games, I can get that. Especially him. Like, he could do it if he wanted to. If that's what he cared about, that's what he would do.
Could do it in his sleep.
Yeah. But he's entering into like his prime, which is what makes it a little bit scary for everybody else. And he's not dependent on athleticism, as we all know, but is going to be able to play this game for a long time, as long as he wants, because he is just so smart and has ridiculous touch. And his shot is like, he's funny to watch. Like, he's, some of the shot, the way his shot looks, it can just be so comical. I just love watching him. I love watching this Nuggets team. Like, they've done such a good job of putting this team together. But yeah, he's the best player in the league. And I'm with you. I don't think it's that close. And I think that we're like entering an era where that's going to be the case for a little while.
So here's the reason that I think Embiid is like pretty clearly number two for me.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Nurse has done a fantastic job of actualizing that two-man game between Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid. But I think more than anything, what Embiid has gotten more comfortable with and has improved with, I think in part because of the space that Nurse allows them to play with his incredible scheme that they're operating with. Like, they run a ton of empties where he's getting the ball in the middle of the court with a little pocket pass from Tyrese Maxey, and then he's able to survey and figure things out. He's been drastically, drastically, drastically better as a passer this season than I've ever seen him before.
That's true.
You know, it's still nowhere near Jokic level. It's still nowhere near, you know, that kind of like elite level echelon.
Mm-hmm.
But this was coming from a level with Embiid, frankly, where I thought it was pretty below average a lot of the time. Like, you look at his assist to turnover ratio, 2020-2021, it was like 2.8 to 3.1. Like, it was negative. Yeah. It was negative in 2019-20 as well. He is slowly but surely improved in that way as a passer and playmaker for his teammates and the ability to read the floor. This year, it's taken a big jump to where I think he's been a little bit worse defensively than what we've seen from him in the past, personally. Not a ton worse, but just a little bit. I think the passing and playmaking more than covers for that. And on top of it, you still have a guy who's leading the league in scoring here. 33 points per game has been fantastic. Yeah. Joel, to me, is, you know, the number two guy in the regular season, at least. I think he needs to prove it a little bit in the playoffs, but in terms of regular season basketball, I think that Joel has proven himself to be the number two guy.
Yeah, I think like some of it is he's recognizing double teams so much faster. And like, that's not like, some of this is Nick Nurse. Like, that's not Nick Nurse. Like, this, that's also just like Joel getting better.
Yep, I agree.
And like, those, the way that he and Maxey work together is, it's seamless. It's flawless. It's, it's, and it's winning basketball too, like between those two. And like, there was a lot of speculation about, well, you know, Harden led the league in assists last year, and Harden did this, and like, how are they going to do without him? Like, boy, like, their chemistry is so much better than Harden and Embiid's chemistry ever was. And so like, what happened to them is a very good thing. Yeah.
It's so much more direct. Everything is so much more direct. Instead of Harden, you know, kind of pounding the ball into the ground for possession after possession from time to time, right? Mm-hmm. Everything's based off of movement with Maxey. You know, they're trying to get into things quicker. They're trying to get into things in a very direct manner. And I think that's really helped their offense free flow into itself much better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
The number three and the number four guys here is where we start to have a fun conversation, I think. Mm-hmm. I have Tyrese Haliburton at three right now. I have Shea Gilgeous-Alexander at four right now.
I have Shea at three. I've watched every single second of him, and I don't like disparage you at all for like your order.
I'm with it for what it's worth. If you have Shea at three, like this is the tier, is like 3-4. Either way, like I'm good with this 100%.
Yeah, Shea has been so impressive, and to me, it's the defensive end has been the game changer for him this year. He has like the stats are there, like you can find evidence of it if you're not watching. Like he leads the league in steals. He has like the most steals by far in the NBA this year, like a pretty wide margin. I think he has like the most contested threes in the league by far. He's like tons of hustle stats. Like there's a lot there that you can say, but he is just adjusting to becoming one of the best two-way guards in the NBA, and perhaps he already is that. Because offensively, over 30 points per game, 6-6. I mean, he's really dominant, and he's starting to use the three ball a little bit more. He's been killer in the mid-range. His free throws are down a little bit, but he still leads the league in free throw percentage. I mean, he's unstoppable at this point as an offensive player, just because, like, we all know, like, the change of speed stuff is clinical. You know, there's not really many guys in the league that can do like the stop and start, you know, over and over again as he gets to the hoop or as he gets to his mid-range shot. You know, he can decide when his foot gets inside the three-point line, he can decide, like, do I want to stop and pop? Do I want to get all the way to the hoop? Do I want to try to get fouled? Do, like, what do I want to do here? And the creativity is off the charts. And, you know, similar to Halliburton, like, just an outrageously great teammate that is helping the guys around him become better players too. So,
yeah, I think that's completely reasonable. And I think that you are totally good with it. Honestly, if I had to pick one of those two guys to win a basketball game tomorrow, I would pick Shea. Like truly, yeah. I would. The reason I went with Halliburton in the MVP discussion specifically is I think his teammates are worse. I think you would agree with that.
I would say, that they are worse as far as like ceiling goes, but I also just wonder if like the fit is better in Indy. You know what I mean?
Oh, really? Like really?
Starting lineup fit.
Like the Giddy stuff has been like a total nightmare over the course of the last few weeks.
The Giddy and the Giddy and Dort in particular is like teams have started to put their centers on Giddy. They leave Dort on an island.
Yeah.
You know, with Halliburton, like he's got adequate space. They put Bruce Brown in the right spot every time. You know, I think, and you know, they geared that lineup for Halliburton. You know,
yep.
Whereas, like with the Thunder, you know, the lineup isn't necessarily geared toward Shea. It's geared toward having like a high functioning NBA team that is going to compete for an NBA title someday. Not today, but someday. Be for an NBA title because of the overwhelming playmaking and talent that they have there. You know, it's going to take time for it to gel, and I still, you know, we don't have to get into the Giddy portion of it, but like there's going to be bumps in the road, and there were going to be bumps in the road, you know, with the Thunder, and some of it is just their age. So that's why I would kind of like push back on that a little bit.
I think that you're not wrong to push back on that. The more I think about it, I think what I was thinking is like, I think Chet is the best. Like if you put the other, you know, guys on the roster, like into a group.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chet's the best player out of, you know, the Thunder and Pacers guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would take Miles next. And then I think I would take Jalen Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what? Like the Pacers are deeper. With dudes,
they're deeper just because, like, I mean, Dort's a good player, but I don't know that I think I might take all the other guys on the Pacers over him. Same with Giddy right now,
probably not Obi, probably not
Obi. Yeah, not Obi, but just like the way that, and it's funny because, like, the Thunder have like their own version of Bruce Brown on the team and Kendrick Williams. No, they're not that dissimilar of player,
yeah.
But they just have him coming off the bench.
And then they have Isaiah Joe. They have Casey.
They have their Isaiah Joe, which is their buddy Heald. Yeah, I mean, they have their version. They actually have their version of the Pacers starting lineup on the roster already. They just don't deploy it. But part of that is just that they have a lot of talent spread throughout, you know, and you know, maybe they will eventually need to make the Mathurin move that they did, you know, that the Pacers did with Giddey.
I think that that's where it's headed. Like they're going to have to do that. Like they need to take Giddey out of the starting lineup because Houston, I think particularly, showed the blueprint on what to do. Like you just play Şengün on him for, you know, I think it was like they played him on him, you know, for a substantial portion of that game. So
on him, but also off of him.
No, like didn't guard him. Like truly did not guard him.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, hey, Şengün, keep an eye on this guy, but like also like be in drop coverage. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Josh is going to have to shoot. Okay. So Halliburton here currently is averaging 27 points, I think 12 assists, 2.4, 2.3 turnovers per game, something in that ballpark, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many people have ever done that in league history?
Is it zero?
It's zero. Do you know how many people have ever averaged 25 and 10 with under 3 turnovers in history?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
It's zero. Do you know how many people have averaged 24 points and 9 assists with under 3 turnovers per game?
Is it also zero?
It's also zero, but Nikola Jokic is also doing that this season as well so far. So it's not that Halliburton is, you know, doing things that people haven't seen. He's blowing like things out of the water that we haven't seen before in terms of combining pull-up shooting, scoring, decision-making and passing and driving transition play, playmaking for his teammates, and elite-level decision-making on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what Tyrese Halliburton's shooting splits are, Andrew?
I don't have them right in front of me, but they're absurd.
He is at 52.5. 44.1 from three, 88% from the line. He is at 44.1% from three on 9 3-point attempts per game. This is seriously like his offensive game right now is like if you made Stephen Curry the best like passer decision maker point guard in the league. That's what I think like people haven't understood. And I don't think the shooting is going to hold up to that level at that volume. Just to be completely honest, like I think he'll probably be at like 40, something like that. But like, I don't think he's going to be at like 45, right?
Yeah.
You throw in the fact that 12 assists in like 2.4 turn. What are we doing?
12 assists, doesn't ever turn the ball over. And like, more importantly, and this is like something that Steph does too, is that they both lead in such a way that everybody wants to follow. Yeah. And like that to me is so important for the future of the Pacers franchise because it literally changed everything about the way the Warriors function.
Yeah.
Is the way that Steph Curry leads. It's not only the shooting, but it's like that everybody would do anything for Steph Curry. And like the Steph comp, like there's definitely game-wise, there's some things about it that are much different. But leadership-wise and joy-wise, like it's the same stuff. Like it's the same blueprint. You know, that's to me is like the most one of the most interesting things. And we talked about it earlier. Like he's gonna recruit guys to come play with him, and that's what the Pacers are really lacking. Like just like one like real dude next to him, where it's like, hey, it's Tyrese Halliburton and fill in the blank. That are going to dominate the Eastern Conference. And whoever that is, I don't know. I mean, you mentioned OG. I don't know that OG necessarily like hits that level of what they kind of need, but Tyrese is somebody that if you're a Pacers fan, like, man, you're feeling really good about where this is all going, for a multitude of reasons. And like, the statistical case is right now absurd, and I cannot wait to watch him again tomorrow.
So Stephen Curry's 2016 season, the one where he won MVP, right? Like, that widely seen as one of the greatest offensive seasons in NBA history, right? He averaged 30 points, you know, 50% from the field, 45% from three, 90% from the line, 6.7 assists, 3.3 turnovers, you know, phenomenal season, right? And that was in an era that was a little bit different than the one we're in now, totally, from a base perspective, offensive efficiency, everything like that. That season, Stephen Curry's offensive EPM, so estimated plus minus, according to dunksandthrees.com, Taylor Snar's really, really good all-in-one metric that is considered, you know, league-wide to be the best, like, public-facing metric right now. He had a plus 9.2 offensive EPM that season. Do you know what Halliburton's offensive EPM is right now?
I don't.
It's plus 9.4. Basically, what Tyrese Halliburton is doing right now, and again, I don't know that this will hold over the course of the full season, it is better than anything we've seen from Steph offensively.
Yeah.
And it's better than anything we've seen from Jokic offensively in terms of EPM. That's how good he's been offensively. I don't think enough people have recognized, like, the, everyone can talk about, like, oh my God, he's been unbelievable in these in-season tournament games, everything like that. Like, it's not just that. I don't think people have realized the extent to which he has been elite. And oh, by the way, they have a 123.4 offensive rating or whatever, and that's setting the league record by like 4 points per 100 possessions.
Yeah,
it's insane what he's doing. He is absolutely unbelievably good right now. And to me, like, I had to put him at number three because of that. I had Giannis at five. It sounds like you had Embiid at five.
I had Embiid at five. Yes.
Okay. So that's our all NBA team for the first team, right? Second team, I had my next group of three, including like Giannis, was Tatum, Luka, and LeBron. I would have had Tatum six, LeBron seven, Luka eight.
Yeah. I have Durant six. I have LeBron seven.
Eight, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say I have Durant six, LeBron seven, Luka eight. And then Tatum next on my list.
Yeah, so I had KD at 10 and I had Steph at 9 right now.
Okay. I have De'Aaron Fox at 10, by the way.
And I have De'Aaron at 11. So we're like kind of in the same ballpark here on where we're at. So I want to spend a minute on LeBron here. I kind of waited on the in-season tournament thing because I wanted to hold off on LeBron because I knew I wanted to talk about him here. LeBron has been like back to his best again this season, like pretty, maybe not like the elite, unbelievable, like best player in the world, like maybe ever LeBron, but he has been ridiculous this season. He's averaging 25 points, 7.5 rebounds, 6.6 assists per game. More than that, though, he's been much better defensively this season than what we've seen from him in the last few recent years. He has been fantastic, unbelievable this season.
Athletically, I mean, he was in that game last night. I mean, I mentioned it, like he was the most athletic guy on the court. I mean, he glides and moves like no other, heck, 35-year-old I've ever seen. And the fact that he's doing this at this age, where he is clearly the best player on the team, the engine of what they do, shooting the ball pretty well too from deep, and like taking a pretty nice volume of threes too, is like been a little bit of a change for him. Like he just looks great. he looks great. He looks like he's ready to compete. And I wonder if he will keep the foot on the gas after tomorrow and what that will look like through March. And maybe things change. We're like, oh, well, LeBron has fallen off, and maybe he won't be in this type of conversation for the rest of the season, and then kind of save himself for the playoffs. And if I were him and I were 39 years old trying to win another title, that's what I would do. But he cares about this in-season tournament. He wants to win it. And the fact that he can still put his mind to it and like have to go through Durant to make it happen. I mean, they dismantled the Pelicans, and some of that was like not just the Lakers. That was the Pelicans doing too. But yeah, he's been unbelievable, deserving of an All-NBA nod again, deserving of an All-Star spot, deserving to be an All-Star starter, more than likely. He's been absurd. And
yeah,
it's amazing to watch him. Like, to be able to watch him through the years and get to see him do this in person still at this, like, I feel so blessed myself just to be able to watch him play in person. Because like what we're watching is unprecedented. Like, we talk about like a lot of unprecedented things with like Jokic and Haliburton and all these guys. Just what he's done longevity wise is so unprecedented. Like, we may never see this ever again. We may never see a player that's this great for this long. And I feel like one of our themes here throughout the show is like intelligence. It's like that intelligence is not, just doesn't wane at all. And it's his athleticism is like probably the most impressive thing. It's like, I can't believe he can still do that. Like, I can't believe he can still get up like that.
At what age do you think LeBron would still be like a top 40 player in the league because of that intelligence? might be like
47,
48. Yeah, like that was going to say like 47, 48. I mean,
isn't that crazy? Like, that's like, that's so crazy. That's so crazy to me.
Like, I think like mid 40s, he'd like drop off of, you know, like all NBA for sure, right?
Like, he's too good of a passer. He's too good of a rebounder. Like, he's becoming a good shooter, like a better shooter as he gets older. It's like, why not? It's going to come down to like, what does he want? Like, what does he want?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
You know, like, that's what it'll come down to. It's not going to, like, he's going to stop playing, and there's going to be like, yeah, like, there's a lot of meat on the bone there for LeBron if he wants it.
Yeah, there really is. Like, he, if he really wanted to, he'd be able, the thing that might drive him, what if he just decided like, okay, fuck it. Like, nobody's ever going to break the records I wanted, like that I have. Nobody's ever going to come close to the scoring record again.
He could do it. He could do that.
He really
could. Lock it all up. He could lock it all up if he wanted to.
Yeah. Like, he could make it so that like nobody's within like 10,000 points of him, I think. That'd be nuts.
I wouldn't put it past him to do it either. I really wouldn't.
I don't know. It's just going to depend on like how long he wants to play. Like, honestly, I think a piece of it depends on like, you know, is Bronny in the NBA, and like, does he really want to play like an extended period with Bronny? Right. We'll see. Yeah. Okay.
That's true.
Tatum, you know, Luka, Steph, KD, those are the guys I have. You have Fox in this mix. Let's go with, you know, anybody that you want to talk about there is fine with me.
I love what De'Aaron Fox has done, and he's missed a little bit of time so far, but there's just a little skepticism around the Kings going into the season. Like, are people going to figure them out? Are they, you know, they had, you know, such luck with their health and yada yada yada. And but boy, has he taken a step up in the 14 games that he's played.
I agree.
He's 35 and 6, basically, over one and a half steals, taking 8 threes per game, which is a career high by far, making 35%, which is, he only outdid that his second year in the league, which he wasn't taking that many. He's been so good. He's up to his free throw rate. He's up to his 3-point attempts. He's just a more dominant player, period. Yeah. And like, that's the reason why the Kings aren't going away. Is because, and people forget how young he is too. He's 26 years old. Like, this isn't like a 30-year-old De'Aaron Fox that is like inching past his prime. he is still in like a pre-prime age.
Yep.
And so De'Aaron has a ways to go to get better. And he at least in these 14 games, has taken a massive step forward as an offensive player. And like to me, he's been outrageously impressive.
Yeah, so totally agree with you. To me, the big thing is the shooting, right? He is clearly drastically better as a shooter than what he was. Mm-hmm. He's clearly drastically mm-hmm. more comfortable taking those shots than what he was. Look, it's 14 games. I want to see exactly where it settles in terms of him. Mm-hmm. Like if he's a 36% three-point shooter on 8 attempts per game, when you throw that with his speed, with his synergy with Domantas Sabonis and, you know, handoffs, screening actions, things like that, he is unstoppable. Like he's completely mm-hmm. unstoppable. I gave Steph mm-hmm. the nod over him purely because like Steph has played 19, he's played 14 sure. on some level. Like I do think the results matter on this, which is why mm-hmm. I went, you know, Fox on third team, but there was no way I could get De'Aaron Fox past like 11, even having not played that many games at this point comparatively mm-hmm. to everybody else. Mm-hmm. He's been unbelievable. And by the way, like Luka's been unbelievable too. He's averaging like 32, I think it's like 32, 8-8 right now, 49% from the field, 39% from three, 76% from the line. The big thing with Luka is always where the pull-up shooting is going to settle in. Right. Right now they're going in, and because they're going in, I think that he has been a huge, huge, huge impact player. The reason that I went with somebody like Halliburton over him, you know, you could point to neither of them are great defenders, both on like extreme offense caliber teams, mm-hmm. not great defensive teams, right? I think that the turnovers and the efficiency for Halliburton and frankly, like the better passing, I think Halliburton has basically been like a better version of what we've seen from Luka to this point mm-hmm. this season.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. He's also a much better rebounder too, which he's been like, he's contributed a lot on the boards. Luka has this season.
I agree.
But yeah, I'm with you. I'd have Halliburton over him as of now, but like, we're also like talking about like pretty small degrees here.
We're a quarter of the way through the season. This thing is going to change like 100%. Mm-hmm. It really is. Okay. And Kevin Durant, like, has been incredible this season. Steph's been incredible this season. KD, you know, for a long stretch there, really tried to carry the Suns, like, on his back when Devin Booker was out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Durant right now is having, like, the quietest 31 point per game season. What do you know what KD is shooting right now, Andrew?
I don't have it in front of me, no.
He's shooting 52, 50, 90.
he's absurd, man. He's so good.
Been unbelievable.
Yeah, that's
he's crazy. Been unbelievable.
That's crazy.
Next group for me, I have a big group, honestly, of like, you know, 8 to 10 guys that I think you could have on the third team. I had Fox on the third team. You had Steph on the third team. That was our one shift there. I have Tyrese Maxey. I have Anthony Edwards. I have Paul George. I have Anthony Davis.
Yeah, I have the same list that you do with Anthony Edwards. I actually have Devin Booker in there, and I can't remember which one I have out. But I have Devin Booker. He's only played 12 games, but boy, has he been good! And he's got to play. I think he can only miss like 7 more games. I think so. He's got to play a lot the rest of the way. And so for now, I can squeeze him in there, but I kind of question whether he'll actually get to the finish line as far as like awards go. He's been, when he's played, you could argue, I would listen to an argument for him on the first team.
I would too. Truly. He has been, I think, their best player when he's played. I went with KD because of the just amount of time that they've both played. And mm-hmm. again, KD is putting up 31 points on 51, 50, 90. Like that's impossible. But look, I think Devin's, you know, shift to playing in a much more on ball state has really, really worked well. He's averaging 8 assists per game. His passing improvement has been, you know, absolutely phenomenal.
Yep. Yeah. He's great. And defensively too. That's like, that's the one thing that maybe,
yeah,
several of these guys that we've talked about could improve at. And Devin Booker is like living proof that some of these guys are going to have the chance to get better. Cause like Booker was not good for many years and has like turned himself into a good defender. And so I think it's like a great blueprint for a lot of these guys to follow. It's like, you can care about both ends of the game and be really productive on both ends.
I'll save Anthony Davis for the next section that we're going to do. Okay. We haven't talked about Anthony Edwards yet, or anybody on the mm-hmm. Minnesota Timberwolves, who, oh, by the way, have the best record in the NBA. It was between Ant and Rudy for me. I went with Ant because, you know, he seems to be the guy there that just drives everything on offense for them. You could say Rudy drives everything on defense for them, but when I watch Anthony Edwards, it just really seems like he's the guy there every single time. I think his passing has improved to a real extent this season. Continues to just be a elite shot maker. Yeah, Anthony Edwards has been great. And Paul George, I think, has been unbelievable this season. Like, yeah, when I watch Paul George, I'm like, man, it's a bummer to me that Kawhi keeps getting hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is. And I thought that for the last 50 games of last season, Kawhi was the probably, you know, fifth or sixth best player in the league. But man, there's just something about Paul George's game that to me is so aesthetically pleasing. Like, oh, I just love watching him play. And oh, by the way, he is also utterly elite on defense. Like, he is so goddamn good on that end of the court. That's why I went with him. The other guy, the guy that like I hated leaving off was Trae Young. I think Trae has been unbelievable this season. I think he has been so fantastic. You look at the offensive game, like he is averaging like 30 points and 10 assists or something right now. He's been unbelievable. 27 points, 10 assists, 41% from the field, 35% from three. He just drives so, so much for them on offense.
He does. The Hawks have been weird. They came through town and we're asking Quinn about, you know, just like overall, like what the team's been like. It was kind of early on in the season. He's like, well, you know, we're really having to learn each other.
Yeah.
I was like, and he kind of like went into that a little bit. He's like, well, and it's funny because like these same guys have been here for a long time, you know, but they're having to like relearn each other in a different context, which I think has been challenging for Trae. To be honest, I think it's not been an easy transition for him. And I think they're still figuring it out. They're just not like it's hard for me to watch the Hawks. They're just like a little uninspiring to me because I don't know like how they reach their next level. Trae's been up and down, but his scoring efficiency is ticking back up. It was really bad, really, really bad to start the season. Like over the last like 10 or so games, like he's been really good. If he had played this way the whole season, you know, I probably would have him in the conversation, but just the beginning part of the season kind of left a bad taste in my mouth.
Defensive player of the year for me is a two-person race. And that's why I wanted to save Anthony Davis. I have Rudy and Anthony Davis at 1 and 2. Again, mm-hmm. I think that they are neck and neck. I went with mm-hmm. Rudy because Minnesota has very clearly been the best defense in the league this season. LA is in the top five. Like, let's not sugarcoat that either. And I think a big piece mm-hmm. of that is Anthony Davis, but he's the critical piece of it. I went with Rudy, though, because he is just back to his full scale best on that end as a elite level rim protector, completely shutting everything down around the basket.
Yeah, he looks spry again. I don't know what happened. I don't know what changed for him. But something clearly did because he just is a much better player. I mean, the Timberwolves, who like have good defenders throughout the roster, but don't necessarily have the team you think, like, oh, yeah, they're going to be first in defense for sure. You know,
Yeah.
They definitely had like the tools and the talent to be there. And they weren't last year. Like, how much different is the team from last year to this year? Not all that different.
Yeah.
I mean, they just have Mike Conley for the whole time now, which I think is a really big deal for them. But like, they were the 10th best defense last season at a 113.1 is what they finished with. They're 106 right now, Sam. 106.
Yeah.
And it seems sustainable to me. Like, they're so good. I mean, I've seen them a few times this year, and Rudy is back to putting fear in the hearts of these guys that he's playing against. The guys don't want, they're second and third guessing decisions that they're making as drivers or as guys that are wanting to get to the hoop or wanting to take shots around the hoop. I mean, he had Chet like real worried on multiple occasions where I was like, okay, whoa. Like I'm so interested, and we'll talk about Chet later, but I'm so interested to see Chet play him again, because Chet has done a really good job so far this year of playing somebody, maybe not doing so hot, and then making adjustments like pretty quickly second time around. And so I'm curious to see what that looks like second time around. I wouldn't be surprised if it looked a whole lot like it did the first time around, because Rudy has just been that good for them. Yeah, he's leading the best defense in the league by far. The rebounding is absurd. The rim defense is absurd. I just think like he's having like a resurgent season. Like this is what the vision was last year.
Yes.
And it did not happen. Whether that be for, you know, it could just be that they needed time. It could just be that like mentally they weren't in the right spot. I know being traded is probably not a whole lot of fun, I can imagine, you know, for these guys. And it just may have taken time for Rudy, but he's back and he's one of the best players in the league. Like, he should be an all-star. He should be, you know, number one for defensive player of the year. I don't think it's that close. I think AD has been definitely awesome, but I just don't think it's particularly close. I think this is not even a two-man race. I think it's if this is what it's going to be the rest of the season, it's Rudy's award, like the end.
The guy that we haven't mentioned yet is Karl Anthony Towns. And
yep.
I want to give Karl Anthony Towns some love here, not on defense necessarily. You know, he's been a little bit better on defense this season for sure. You know, he's there positionally and is at least like not getting destroyed every single game. But offensively, he started like quite poorly. And that was definitely a storyline, right? Sure. I think it came to a head in a game against Boston where they won the game, but he ended up with like 7 points and only played 27 minutes and went 3 for 10 from the field. Since that game, he's averaging 24 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, shooting 57% from the field, 52% from three, 90 from the line. Karl Towns has been unbelievable for about a month long stretch now. And I want to give him flowers. Like I couldn't really get him into all NBA. I couldn't get him into any of the categories here really. But I just wanted to mention, like, I think Karl has been unbelievable this season, and I really do want to kind of show him flowers and show him some respect here. Anthony Davis this season, to me, he just continues to be like the most versatile defender among bigs in the league. The switchability, the ability to protect the rim, the ability to be a primary rim protector, the ability to play different ball screen coverages, it just completely changes what you can do defensively when he's out there. His ability to impact the game in that way is just such an enormous, enormous piece of what makes them special, I think, on that end.
Yeah, the versatility and the rebounding are so crucial to their defense, just like to end the possessions. And then even like offensive rebounding is like a whole another piece of the pie, but like he's been so good on that end for the Lakers too. And the offensive responsibilities that he takes on, like this is where it's like separate from Rudy, where it's like Anthony Davis is like clearly like the better all around player. And I don't think anybody would question that, but boy, like to have the offensive responsibilities that AD does and get virtually no credit for it from many people. And then still compete like he does defensively. Like he truly is a special player And I hope that we get to see like an extended season of health for him. You know, that's just been the thing for a while. Like, he hadn't played, you know, 60 games in several years. And so we can get a healthier season from AD. I think like that to me is like the thing to circle, because once he's, I mean, when he's playing, like, he's passing well, he's rebounding like a monster, he's blocking shots everywhere, he's defending multiple positions, he's taking all kinds of different shots, he's impossible to stop around the hoop. And there's just so many things that he does well, and it's pretty thankless. And a lot of it is because he's under the shadow of LeBron, and you know, he chose that, and I think he wants that. But yeah, he's great, and I think that he's a deserving, you know, top three candidate for this award.
I have Suggs at number three.
Okay.
I have Jalen Suggs at number three. They have been phenomenal on defense this season. I think he keeps the whole thing with his energy, his activity, his aggression, his mentality and his motor out there. It's energy. It is, it provides the energy every single time, right? He is, to me, the reason that they're a top four defense in the league as much as anything else. I also think like Goga Batadze has been like super underrated for them on defense.
Goga's good. Like, Goga's good. I've talked to Dave DeFore about Goga every single week. Dave and I talk about Goga every single week. And yeah, Goga's, he's good. Like, if, you know, maybe Wendell Carter comes back. I mean, not that they would want to trade him, because like, you'd just probably rather have that guy on your team. But like, they could probably get a pretty decent return for Goga. There are a lot of teams that could use him.
I have some takes on that I'll save for another podcast. we can't dive into that because I have some takes. Who did you have at number three?
I have Herb Jones, number three.
Yeah, great. No, Herb Jones has been unbelievable. Did you list Herb as a forward or a guard?
I listed him as, and this is like becoming a trend from guys that I listed him as basketball player. Cause like especially as a defender.
Yeah.
I get, it depends on what team it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even dependent on, like, it's only dependent on like who's on the other side and what does Willie Green want him to do? Because the options are everything with Herb, just because he is so relentless, he's so quick, he's got such long arms, he can defend any, I mean, I would feel comfortable with him defending anybody. Like, is there anybody that you'd be like, yeah, I'm not so sure about him defending them? Is there anybody?
No, I'm good.
Yeah
100% good. I ended up with Herb, where would he have been? It would have been like fifth or sixth for me, so I'm totally with that.
It's such a hard award too. It's like, because like, we don't have like the offense, like the stats to like compare like on like we do with offense and MVP and all that. But
it's especially hard in a 20 game sample, right? Like, I think Jaden McDaniels in the 11 games that he played has been like unbelievable, but you know, he's missed nine games already, right? So it's going to be hard. I've all defense, Jalen Suggs, Alex Caruso in the guard spots, because I actually do believe that we still have positions for this, right? That was my impression.
When you said it, I think that's correct, but I don't know that I remember.
I'm not 100% sure.
There were a lot that changed, and I can't remember if that was one of them.
I did like 10 minutes of Googling on this and couldn't find a change, so I just used positions. Okay, so Jalen Suggs and Alex Caruso at the guard positions. Anthony Davis and Evan Mobley, by the way, I think has continued to be unbelievable on defense for the Cleveland Cavaliers this season.
Very good.
It's been great.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, like, the big thing with Evan Mobley has typically been, but like, how do you separate Jared Allen from him, right? Jared Allen missed the first few games, and I thought Evan Mobley was fantastic in those games as well defensively.
We got to see it.
Did a great job. Second team, I have Shea, I have Dylan Brooks, I have Herb Jones, I have Jaren Jackson Jr., I have Bam Adebayo. What does your teams look like? B, anywhere you want to go there?
Well, I'm kind of curious where you have Chet in this mix.
Yeah, did not place Chet, because I used category fraud to get Anthony Davis on the first team as it was.
Yeah.
And I still felt like AD, Bam, and Jaren were the three that I like really, really needed at the center spot. And I still used like category fraud to get like Jaren out of the center spot, which I feel like he's played like a pretty decent amount of this season.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you're like, sell me on Jaren.
I mean, that team has been absolutely like horrible throughout the course of the season, but it has nothing to do with their defense. They're still in the top eight in the league defensively. Mm-hmm. Without Steven Adams, without Brandon Clark, without, you know, John Moran, obviously, which might help their defense, but like, mm-hmm. he has continued to lift that defense like across the board. He has been mm-hmm. unbelievable. Like, you look across that roster, like Desmond Bane's fine on defense, right? Marcus Smart has missed mm-hmm. 9 games. Santi Aldama missed a big stretch at the start of the season. Wouldn't call him like an elite level defender. Bismack mm-hmm. Biyombo, you know, is a guy that they pulled off of free agency. David Roddy, Luke Kennard, Zaire Williams, Jalen Noel, Derek Rose, you know, John mm-hmm. Concher, Jacob Gilliard, like shout out Jacob Gilliard, works his ass off, just very small. The fact very that this small. Team has a top eight defense is miraculous to me.
Yeah. Okay. I can buy that.
Yeah. And then Dylan Brooks, I think, deserves like a lot of credit as like a floor raiser for Houston. Just bringing energy and aggression and toughness every night. They have a top three defense in the league. And to me, he's the biggest piece of why.
Oh yeah. I would not question Dylan. He's been great. I mean, he was part of like what allowed the Rockets to defend in the way that they did the other night was that they said, you take Shea, we'll mix and match the rest. And, you know, he did good enough. Yep. You know, he is that disruptive. And he is a floor raiser defensively. I questioned that a little bit, to be honest, especially with that team. I questioned it. And the fact that he's gotten them to do this is like, okay, like I buy it. Like I definitely buy it. He's been great.
What do you have any other teams here?
Let me pull up my defense. Let's see. I still think Brook Lopez has been pretty good, especially more recently. And so I still think of him. Did you mention Drew Holiday?
So the problem I had with Boston, so Boston is the number two defense in the league. It was hard for me to separate Derek White, who has been great defensively again.
Yeah.
Drew Holiday, mm-hmm. who has been great defensively again. I think Jaylen mm-hmm. Brown's actually been quite good defensively. And I think Kristaps has been quite good defensively. To me, it was almost like they have four guys like in the top 30, top 25, something like that. Plus Tatum's been like fine on defense this year.
Yeah.
And like, I couldn't get anybody in the top 10 though.
Yeah. I would put him there just because of the versatility, I guess, because they kind of use him all over the place. Like similar to like the description I had of Herb earlier. It's like they're throwing him on all kinds of people throughout the season. So like that would be that would be why I would squeeze him in.
Yeah. And then like, I felt the same way about Ananobi and Barnes. I think both of them have been quite good. I think Barnes's metrics are a little bit overrated defensively, based on like the role he plays. They've started to shift toward like Barnes playing this like center field role on the back line. And then OG playing, obviously continuing to be like the stopper guy. It's kind of hard to separate like which one I felt like was more important to that, I guess. And their defense has just been like very slightly worse than some of these other defenses that we've talked about.
I would probably lean OG, at least for now.
That was my reaction to. Okay. Did you want to say, you said teams. Okay. Do you want to move to Rookie of the Year? And this will be the last longer conversation that we have.
Yeah.
I think that Rookie of the Year is honestly the easiest top three to assemble right now.
I would agree. it was not, I didn't have to give too much thought to it.
Yeah. It's Chet 1, Vic 2, and Hawkez 3 to me.
Yeah.
And I just didn't even really have to think twice about it. We haven't talked a ton about Chet here. Chet has been a borderline all-star. I couldn't get him into like real all-NBA consideration, but
yeah,
if he makes the all-star team, I would not be blown away by that. Like, I think that it could come down to one of him or like Alperen Şengün. And I think they've been very, very close. I think I might take just Şengün by a hair right now, given the overall versatility of what he brings on offense. But Chet has been unbelievable this season. You watch him every night. Like, you, this is your show now.
Taking over. Yeah, he's been better than I expected. A lot of it is the shooting. Like, he's a legit shooter. And I think that's a huge deal. The Thunder are the best free throw shooting team in the league, and he's going to be a huge part of that moving forward. But yeah, the scoring has been great. The timely shots too. Like, he has a knack for just hitting threes in rhythm in moments that are very important. He's done it twice. He did it, obviously, the Golden State one that people remember was absurd. He did it in Cleveland earlier this year. As a rim deterrent, it's something the Thunder haven't seen since a guy like Serge Ibaka, and he's like, frankly, better than Serge was, just because he just thinks the game at such a high level. He's everything, and he can, like, his handle is better than I thought it would be too, and he doesn't test it all that much yet. Certainly in transition he does, and you can just see that, like, this is a superstar. Like, Chet is a superstar. I think, like, the top two guys are going to be, like, forces to be reckoned with in the NBA for a very long time, because the skill level is just out the wazoo with both of them. And yeah, I think it's easy to give the nod to Chet because he's just further along, and some of that, like, he's older and he's been with the team for a year. The situation is better, but, like, he's just more efficient. Defensively, I just think, like, he's fits in better as, like, a cog in the system, and I don't begrudge the Spurs for doing any of the things that they're doing, because I think that they really needed to figure out
there's one thing I begrudge them for.
Well, and I honestly don't begrudge them for hardly anything, to be honest, because I do think that they need to figure out everything that there is to know about Wemby this year. Like, that's what it's all about. It's like figuring out, like, what exactly do we have? What do we need to work on? How do we get this guy to be the most dominant player in the NBA? And I think that they're on their way to doing that. They're also losing a crap ton of games, which is also why you can't put him number one. If they were just losing a normal amount of games, you know, and, like, they've lost
15 in a row.
Like, he just can't. It's unprecedented to put a guy as, like, the leader for Rookie of the Year on a team that's that bad.
It's honestly, they should send, like, Monty Williams and the Detroit Pistons, like, the nicest bottle of champagne imaginable, because if it wasn't for the Pistons being a total dumpster fire, San Antonio losing 15 straight would be an enormous story right now.
Yeah, that's true.
It would totally be a big deal. And because, Detroit has been, like, a total disaster, it's been a little bit better. The big thing for Chet is he's just not shooting well, but he's not shooting well even on, like, you know, open shots. You know, he's shooting, like, 22% on catch and shoot shots right now. And that's not good enough. It's, like, the easiest way to say it. It's kind of not good enough.
Yep. But yeah. It's Chet by a good margin today. And it's very exciting. Jaime, though, like, did you see this coming for Jaime? Like, since you asked me to do this, I've just been weirdly curious, like, your thoughts on, like, Jaime from last year at UCLA to this point in the season with the Heat, which is probably unsustainable in some ways, but, like, he's been so good.
Yeah, so he's doing essentially literally the exact thing he did at UCLA, which you don't expect for a rookie coming into the NBA, maybe is the way to put it. I think a big thing for his success, and by the way, like, it's a credit to him that he fits this Heat culture stuff. Like, don't get that twisted. A big piece of his success is finding a coach in Eric Spoelstra that's willing to lean into what he does great. Instead of trying to fix and try, instead of trying to fit Hawkes, who has this kind of unconventional game, into a box, he instead has leaned into what makes Jaime great, which is mid-post footwork, being able to process, you know, reads, being able to let him play in like occasional ball screens, using his versatility really well, allowing him to have the freedom to just like cut as he needs to, right? Anytime, right? So I think that's the big thing for me is he went to a place that embraces who he is as a player, which has allowed him to thrive as early as possible. And he's incredibly skilled. Like, the feet are unbelievable. His deceleration is unbelievable. I think he's improved as a shooter. I always thought the shooting percentages were a little bit lower than what the actual shooting talent was at UCLA, because everything was contested because everybody sold out to stop him. But yeah, no, I think he's been great. And I love everything I've seen from him. Let's go to Coach of the Year.
Do you like his nickname, though?
What is that?
Have you seen his Basketball Reference nickname? Juan Wick.
Oh, God. What?
Have you not seen that?
That just feels like a little bit like appropriative, maybe.
You think? Like,
I'm very interested to know more about that and how that came up, I think, is where I'm at on that.
Can I give a shout out to Kaysen Wallace real quick?
Yeah. Do you want to do like a quick all rookie team? Like, I can kind of make that up. I didn't ask you to do that. I can make one up off the top of my head though.
Yeah, let's just give our top five.
Yeah. So go ahead and talk about Kaysen while I'm kind of figuring that out.
Yeah, Kaysen's been really good. And it's been a lot of it I credit to Mark Degnault, because he's willing to use Kaysen in a lot of different ways, and Kaysen's been good in that. They use him as a screener a lot. They use him in the dunker spot. He's been really good spotting up. He defends well. He is a brilliant defender and a brilliant basketball player. Like, he knows how to play, just flat out knows how to play. And they give him lots of different roles, and he kind of takes them all on, and he's been good in almost every setting. So yeah, he's been great. I think Brandon Miller's been good. It's just hard to watch that team. It's just like, for me, but I like what Brandon Miller's done. I think Derek Lively is like very, very clearly a top five rookie in this class. So I'd probably have Chet, Wemby, Hawkes, Lively, Kaysen would probably be my top five, though.
Yeah, I would flip Brandon for Kaysen and have Kaysen at six. I would have Asar Thompson seven, Bilal Coulibaly eight. I'd have Keontae George, I think, right now at nine.
Yeah, that's fair.
And yeah, this is now where this gets fun. I have to come up with a tenth.
What do you think about Pajimski?
Not quite. Like, I don't think he's played quite enough.
Yeah.
Like, get there for this. Because they've been like yanking him in and out of the rotation, unfortunately. I know he's played like 15 games or whatever, but like, it feels like it's been more hit or miss. Also, I think his, like, people love the charge taking stuff, but like, I think he's really gotten hit defensively when I've seen him.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about Monty? What he's doing with Asar?
I don't have a crazy problem with what he's doing with Asar. Because, man, Asar is bad on offense right now. Like, it's really, really hard. It's really, really hard. Really, really hard. Mm-hmm. Like he can't really do anything other than like cut. Like he airballs multiple, you know, it feels like times a week. Teams don't guard him from three. Like turns the ball over a lot. He's great on defense, like truly unbelievable on defense, and that's why he ends up in this conversation. And why for me I have him still at like seven. But
yeah,
it's a little bit hard there.
Did you consider Lively at three at all?
Yes, but I think it's clearly Lively at four now. I think Lively's been like critical for keeping their defense afloat in any way, shape, or form. But yeah, I would clearly have Lively at four at the moment.
Okay.
So yeah, it'd be Chet, Vic, Hawkes, Lively, Brandon Miller for me first team. You would have Kaysen for Brandon Miller on the first team.
Yes.
I would have Kaysen, Asar, Bilal Coulibaly, Keyonte George, and probably one of Sasha Vezenkov or Jordan Hawkins. I'd have to look more into that to like decide which one makes more sense to me. Pajemski, I guess, would probably be in the mix. Honestly, like in point, like I think Scoot's going to get into the mix. If you look at his last, you know, little stretch here of five games, it's been better. And I think he's been pretty good defensively this season too, even though like it's been aggressive, but you can't have him here right now by any stretch of the imagination. Guys like Keyonte George and, you know, even like Pajemski, I think has been better than Scoot so far. Yeah. So I'd have to think about Hawkins versus Vezenkov at this point. Sasha's been quite good. He's older, but like you kind of have to consider him, I think, for an honor at least. Second team, do you have any thoughts?
This class has been weird, is my thought.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of guys that aren't getting a lot of opportunities that you would have thought. And some of that is like the Pacers are just good and they can't play Jairus Walker. You know, they don't have the time to give him to develop. I'd like to see a lot more Taylor Hendricks
as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anthony Black, I think, has like a case as well for what it's worth. Starting for the, you know, what, fifth best team in the league, something like that right now. Look, when he's out there, I feel like he's not doing a crazy amount on offense, to be honest with you, but
he's not. Yeah.
Yeah. He has been very impactful on defense, at least, and moves the ball. Thomas Carnero brings up, you know, Tamani Kamara has been fun. I agree. He's been really great on defense. You know, if this is an all rookie defense team, he'd probably be, honestly, he'd probably be number two or three behind Chet and Vic. He's been great. Maybe Asar as well. He'd be first team all defense rookie, but the offense I think is a real, real drag for him.
Yeah. Sasser. I'm just like starting to think of guys that play, you know, like that's
Sasser's like been fun. Yep.
That's just kind of hard. That's the hard thing is like, there's so many guys that were picked in the first round that just don't even play.
Right. And that's normal. Rookies are bad in the NBA typically. So this is why we don't melt down about rookie seasons for guys. Walker Kessler is a prime example. Kessler's been much better over the course of the last little while, but you know, I don't think anybody would take him third in the 2022 draft. Coach of the year. I went with Chris Finch at one. From the Minnesota Timberwolves. The reason for that is pretty simple. They have the best team in the league right now, 16-4. Mm-hmm. B, that's a complicated roster to try and make work. Karl Towns and Rudy Gobert trying to make that fit work together. You know, they've dealt with, you know, Jaden McDaniels being out of the lineup here, trying to figure out like the hierarchy of that team as well with Anthony Edwards, you know, leaping into stardom now. You know, that could be a problem with guys like Karl Towns and Rudy Gobert. It hasn't been to this point, right? They've been relatively healthy outside of McDaniels to this point, but yeah, I love everything I've seen from Chris Finch. I think he's a creative offensive mind that has really found a way to, you know, make the defense truly elite.
Yeah, I will echo that. Second, I have Rick Carlisle for things that we mentioned earlier, where he's just like pushing all the right buttons and this team is just clicking. And you, when you watch them, you think, oh my gosh, like the Pacers are getting everything out of this roster that they could right now. Yep. And like that to me is like what a good coach does. So like Rick Carlisle. Second, I would have Ime Udoka third, just because like trying to pull that group out of the mud that they were in is not an easy task. And he appears to be the right person to have done that. And so I have him third. And then like obviously like Mark Degnault's done a great job. Nick Nurse, who we talked about earlier, has been great. Jamal Mosley like deserves a mention and like is first on a lot of people's ballots for good reason. It's a tough award to give, but that's just kind of where my head's at.
Yeah, I had Jamal Mosley at two behind Finch. I think that what he's done to craft that defense has been unbelievable. And like, this is a team that has been hurt. Like Markelle Fultz went out, like their starting point guard went out 5 games into the season. Their starting center, Wendell Carter, went out 5 games into the season, and they're sitting here at 14-7 and have really been great. I had Rick Carlisle at three. I had Nick Nurse at four. I had Ime Udoka at five. I think Udoka has been phenomenal, like you said.
Yeah.
So basically the same top five. Most improved player, I have Halliburton one, Maxey two.
I think that that is very fair. I have Alperen Şengün at one and Tyrese Maxey at two.
So my thing about Alpi is I don't know how much better he's actually gotten as opposed to just like them using him better and just leaning into him being great. You know that what is, I mean?
That's it's a very fair take.
Yeah.
But year over year, it still looks like improvement.
Yeah, no, that's totally fine. And I think he's gotten way better on defense. Like, he is not like a sieve.
He had, like, he's not.
A top three
he's
defense good. With him out there is huge
because
he was a sieve on defense last year, regardless of what Houston fans will tell you. He was really bad on defense last year.
No question.
He is not bad on defense anymore. He's actually fine. I have a fun third name that you literally can't find on any betting site for most improved player right now.
Ooh, I'm very intrigued to hear this.
Doesn't even have odds up. I have Duncan Robinson at number three. I have not seen a player other than Duncan go from where he was last season, which was out of the rotation a lot of the time for the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
Couldn't play. Like, struggled to get on the court for whatever reason. They did not feel comfortable playing him all that often. Have you watched much of him yet?
The jarring, yes. And the jarring thing, one, I hate watching the Heat, so like this is saying a lot right here. But the jarring thing about him to me is like he takes twos now. Like, who is this? Like, there's like, it's very weird. Yeah.
No, he is like sizing up dudes in ball screens now and just being like, oh, yeah, like I can just get by this big. Like they're going to try and switch me just to try and stop the 3-point shot. OK, I can just get by this guy now. I'm just going to try and drive to the rim and score. Duncan Robinson is averaging 15 points, 3 assists, shooting 49% from the field, 44% from three, 84% from the line. If you look at it from when the game after they put him in the starting lineup. So they put him in the starting lineup on November 11th. If you look from November 12th onward, he's played 10 games. In those 10 games, he's averaging 18 points on 53, 53, 87. And it's That's like insane. He is out there balling, man. Like
he's been extremely good.
Rushing.
Extremely good. Yeah. I mean, he's part of a lot. Like they don't miss Max Strus at all because like
no,
he's been frankly better than Strus was last year.
Like they will use Duncan. They used to run like all those like dribble handoffs and stuff with him and Bam, right? They're using Duncan now in just like ball screens, and they're like, all right, pick and roll, pick and pop. Like, okay, well, you're gonna switch this action. All right, I'm just gonna go get to my little floater on the right side of the court with my right hand. I'm good with that. Like,
yeah.
It's probably the most fun story in the NBA for me this season is Duncan Robinson emerging from the ashes and now being like a really good player again. Like he is truly really good now. And I don't know if it'll last, like, who knows, right? I think it will. Sure. Like, the skill improvement that we have seen from him as a ball handler is real. Like, mm-hmm. he is better at it now. So
yeah.
you throw that in with elite level shooting that we know that he always has. I don't know, man. I think it's
yeah
worth recognizing.
Has anybody gone from, like, horrifically bad contract, can't believe they gave this to him, what's going on, to, like, man, this is a bargain for Duncan Robinson now? Because, like, that has happened, like, overnight, it feels like.
Him at $18 million is, like, probably about right now. Like,
yeah, you know, it's great.
Yeah, it's like a good deal. Okay, yeah. We're good. Like, we're getting real value out of this.
It is an awesome story. It is a very bizarre and awesome story.
You probably could not have given him away last year. True.
No. He was somebody that I was like, you know what? What if, like, the Thunder just, like, decided to call the Heat and say, hey, will you amend this draft pick? And just all you have to do is just send us Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, it's fine. You know? Like, we'll take it. Like they did with Davis Bertans. Yeah.
Yes, like a very similar, like, Davis Bertans type of deal, but with Duncan Robinson. And, you know, Duncan Robinson's clearly a better player than Bertans. So no offense to Bertans, but Duncan's good.
Man, it's been unbelievable to watch that. I'm glad that we could close on that positive note. Andrew, have fun in Vegas. Tell the people where they can find your work. Tell the people what's going on.
Yeah, I would direct you to the Athletic NBA Show YouTube page first. We are, me and my guy Sam N, shot a ton of videos, and a bunch of those are going to be going up on the Athletic NBA Show YouTube page. I talked to a Pacers fan from Hawaii yesterday, and that, like, just absolutely blew my mind. So go check that out. You can listen to Down to Dunk if you want Thunder content. Specifically, subscribe to our YouTube page there as well. Doing lots of fun stuff on our YouTube page all the time, so go check that out. Athletic NBA Show podcasts, Down to Dunk, OKC Dream Team, if you're just, like, some Thunder sicko and you need something else to listen to, you can go to patreon.com/OKC Dream Team. Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Go follow all of Andrew's work. He is the best in the business, one of my favorite people working in all of content creation across the globe. Go to The Athletic, keep me employed over there. I will have, I think, trade deadline big board at some point. I might do, like, a Q&A at some point based off of my big board that I released last week at The Athletic. You can go subscribe and look at that at some point. Go to the YouTube channel, Game Theory Podcast with Sam Vecenie. Go subscribe there. Go subscribe to whatever podcast feed that you listen to the show on. I'll be back either Sunday night or Monday. I'm not quite sure yet what Bryce's schedule looks like, but we will figure it out then. Until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.